Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Fan in Las Vegas, the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, and the Sports Map Radio Network. It is Legends of Sports Friday. That means we are joined by the one and only, it's Andy Bernstein. Hey, Andy, how are you?
I'm great, Arash. I'm great. Great to see you as always, my friend.
You too. You have a very special classic edition, your conversation with Franco Harris. And it was so sad, his passing, because it happened right before they were going to retire his jersey. And such an amazing man, incredible career. Take us back to that conversation. What was that like?
Well, it was so great to connect with Franco, truly one of the legends of NFL football, of course. And his story was so compelling. He was so forthcoming, friendly to talk to. Of course, we spent a lot of time talking about the Immaculate Reception. And we felt it was appropriate now to re-release this episode as a classic. You know, we just lost him in December. I think it was December 22nd. I think he was only, 72 or something when he died. And like you said, they were just about to retire his number, and 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception and all that. So, and leading, you know, into championship weekend of the NFL with the Super Bowl looming, you know, we thought it would be appropriate and honoring his legacy and his memory to release this episode this week.
When you kind of look back at that conversation, is there one thing that sticks out to you? Because he's a hero of so many people, I never got a chance to talk with him. The one thing I've heard was how kind he was.
Yeah. Well, yes, incredibly kind, very humble. He's a very, very humble guy. I think he's one of 9 children, as I remember. And so I think humility was sort of drilled into him as a youngster, and very religious family. You know, the story of the Immaculate Reception from his point of view, I don't think I had never heard that before. I don't know if our listeners had heard it before. There was just so many twists and turns in there. And then, of course, you know, I don't want to say he single-handedly, but that particular moment in sports history literally turned around a franchise.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they were referred to as the SOS, the same old Steelers every year. You know, they just were mediocre at best. And even their own owner didn't believe in them. Because part of the story is, I don't want to ruin it for people because they listen to it, but how their owner, Art Rooney, missed the Immaculate Reception because he was so convinced they were going to lose that game, like they've lost every game, every important game, that he was in the elevator down from the press box to go down to the field to console the players after the game. So, you know, the whole thing was just such a fun interview for me. I had never met him in person either, but I was, you know, as a kid, I followed him, of course. And the Steelers were always this franchise that had this aura about them, even though they might not have been that great. You know, they were just the rough and tough Steelers. And I was thrilled to be able to connect with Franco. I'm so thankful that he was able to take the time to do it.
I love that. And again, just as a reminder, we only play a small snippet of these conversations that you have with these great stars. Tell the folks out there how they can hear the entire thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, our home base is iHeart Podcast. So people can find us on the iHeart app online, as well as Apple, Spotify, and every podcast platform that's out there. Also, you can find us on our website. There's a link on legendsofsport.net, as well as our YouTube channel. This particular episode is not on YouTube because this is before we started recording video. But moving forward, and for past interviews the last couple of seasons, people can see these interviews in full on our YouTube channel, Legends of Sport. And Instagram at Legends of Sport, Twitter at Legends_of Sport. My photography, if you're looking to see what I've been doing the last 40 some odd years, you can go on to my Instagram at ADB Photo Inc.
Love that. All right. With that said, let's now go to the first part of our Legends of Sport conversation. It is Franco Harris.
You're drafted number 13 by the Steelers in 73, and everything takes off from there, right? I mean, the Steelers were the franchise. You know, you guys, you know, won Super Bowl after Super Bowl, four Super Bowls in the 70s. I mean, was there ever a moment where you just like stood back and said, you know, this is unbelievable. How could this be happening to me? You know, I don't take you as a guy who took anything for granted either, you know, with your upbringing and how you guys had to work for everything. So what was, you know, give me an idea what it was like playing with those great Steeler teams and winning and winning and winning. I mean, it must have been amazing.
Well, first of all, you have to understand the history of the Steelers. Mm-hmm. From 1933 to 1971, they were the worst team ever in NFL history.
Mm. I didn't know that.
They had more losses than any team. Mm-hmm. Few points ever scored, most points scored against. Mm. They were bottom of the barrel. Mm. And I didn't know it either. But I did not want to come to Pittsburgh, you know, because I played at Penn State.
Yeah, right.
And I'm thinking, you know, Pittsburgh is like 2-3 hours down the road. Come on, you know,
yeah,
I
right.
want to go to Dallas. You know, it's like, you know, people would say, "What are you going to get? You know, you're going to get drafted, Franco." And I wasn't even sure about being drafted. And I know this is strange, but back then, going into college, a lot of us didn't even give pro football a thought, and I didn't even give it a thought.
No kidding, really?
Wow. It never in my mind as a career.
Hmm.
It never. And then my senior year, people were telling me, "Frank, are you going to get drafted?"
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a surprise that I'm going to get drafted. And I told people, "Well, really anywhere but Pittsburgh or Green Bay."
Hmm. Yeah, you know, too cold in Green Bay, man. Yeah, no way.
Yeah. And I didn't know how bad Pittsburgh was because I really didn't follow pro football that much.
Right.
Like, I watched a Joe Namath Super Bowl, and that was pretty cool. But besides that, didn't really watch probably my whole career, my whole time at Penn State. Maybe I just caught just a few NFL games. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And well, you know, our room, you didn't have TVs in our room, and
right.
You know, you had to, you know, you had to go to the main building to watch TV, and
yeah.
And so I just never really, you know, just never really watched. Watch pro football.
But here you go. But then you get drafted. You're all of a sudden in Pittsburgh, which like your own admission, you don't really want to be. And what did you think, Franco? Did you think this was going to be like your life and your career, and or this was maybe for a couple of years? Or like, how are you looking at it at the moment when you go to training camp in your rookie year? I mean, obviously, you know, they saw something in you. Maybe you didn't even see it in yourself, but the fact that you ended up having this long career and obviously become an icon of the sport. But at the moment, right, did you see it as your career? Did you think that that was going to happen?
Absolutely not. I don't think anybody saw it coming.
Amazing. Yeah.
And first of all, no one saw that 1972 season
right.
happening.
Right.
And, like, I guess with my life when I look at it, and, you know, maybe this is, just doesn't fit into a pattern that people look at, but for me, nothing was really planned. Mm-hmm. Never planned on going to college, never planned on playing pro football, but yet I find myself where the previous stage in some kind of way prepared me for the next stage, but I didn't see
right.
that next stage. But it was like I was being prepared for that next stage and didn't even know it, what it was, what it was to be.
Right.
And then when I got there, I didn't have any expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know what to expect. Like the Steelers, their first 3 years under Chuck Noll, they were 1-13, 5-9, and 6-8.
Mm-hmm.
And so no one was looking at anything significant happening or anything like that. And then when I got there and preseason went pretty well.
Right.
It surprised me. I said, oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
And they were telling me, Franco, when the regular season starts, it's totally different. I'm saying to myself, I can be totally different, but, you know,
uh-huh.
I'm like playing it off, you know. Well, our first regular season game, we're playing the Raiders, and man, was it like night and day.
Yeah.
I mean, the intensity, the violence, the attitude. I mean, it was for real, and it was for real. And
mm-hmm.
and I didn't have a very good game. I had to play because another running back was hurt. Here I'm a rookie, first regular season game, and here I am starting, and you know,
yeah.
it was like, wow. You know, and then the next game, I'm trying to think of the next game when I was and played in Cincinnati, and I fumbled, and I think that fumble might have cost us the game. And then the third game, they really didn't, the game after that, they really didn't play me. The game after that, they really didn't play me. Maybe I went in, maybe I carried the ball three times. So,
uh-huh.
but after the fumble, now I know I'm in the doghouse, right? And not playing me. And I'm just saying to myself, Franco, don't give up.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give up on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep working hard. Stay focused. And I kept training hard And like then I said something to myself. I said, Franco, the next time they put you in, they'll never take you out. And as you know, in football, you know, it happens and you get hurt. And so this was the Houston Oilers, and I said, you know, a running back got hurt. But, you know, Harris, you're in.
You're out of the doghouse now, right? Yeah.
Well, like I go in. And I get my first 100-yard game
mm-hmm.
and my first NFL touchdown. And this was maybe 9 games ago, 8 games ago, whatever. And I end up getting 1,000 yards for the season. And we end up winning our division. I think it was the first time ever, the second time in Steelers history, they ever won their division. And I think the first time I won the division, and we made the playoffs. And I believe this was the second time in Steeler history in their 40-something years, the second time in their history that they made the playoffs.
Wow.
And so that was
amazing.
Incredible run. And I made Rookie of the Year. And then, as you know, we went to the playoffs, and I guess that infamous game against the Raiders.
Yes, you know. Yes. The Immaculate Reception, as it's called, right?
You got it.
Well, Franco, can you walk, like everyone on the planet who is a football fan has seen that play replayed a gazillion times, as you have too. Can you just walk us through what happened there and from your angle, where you were? I mean, how the heck did you do that? I mean, seriously. I mean, that's almost like the hand of God, you know, for Maradona, or, you know, you could probably think of two or three others in the history of sports that the Immaculate Reception is right up there with it.
Well, I'll tell you where that kind of story fits in. Mm. But, you know, we had an incredible season, as I said. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? It ended up happening where we won all these games in a row, and you know, we won the division, and so we're going into the playoff game, and you know, I thought to, you know, reflect also my college career. And when I first went to training camp, you know, like in college, as I said, I never thought about pro ball, so mm-hmm. it wasn't like I think I was building towards anything. But Joe Paterno would always yell at us, "Go to the ball, go to the ball." And you know, when you're in college, oh man, he's hollering at me again, "Harris, go to the ball."
Right.
So when I got to training camp with the Steelers, you know, it all came to me. I said, "I'm the pro now, so go to the ball." So in practice, he'd throw the ball. I would run to where the receiver is, even after I'd be blocking in the backfield. I would mm-hmm. run to where the receiver got the ball. Mm-hmm. Just building habits. And so here we are, playing in this playoff game against the Oakland Raiders. Mm-hmm. And it was a tough defensive game.
Yeah, it was
cold day.
Right, it was like 7-6 or something at the time, right?
No, it was 6-0.
Oh, 6-0.
Well, yeah, at the time.
Yeah.
Well, we were winning 6-0, only two field goals. It was
right
on both sides of the ball. The defenses were tough. And uh-huh. then on a play, kind of like a busted pass play, Kenny Stabler ran in for a touchdown, put him ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And so then before we know it, it's fourth down, a long way to go. And you know, I go into the huddle on this fourth down thinking, okay, Franco, play to the end. And they call a play, and I'm not even part of the pass pattern or anything like that, right? My job is to stay in and block,
mm-hmm.
up on the line and block. Well, you know, the ball is hiked, and after a little while, everything breaks down, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess my blocking wasn't the best either, helping the guys out. But the guy decided to release and try to be an outlet pass, you know, for Brad. And so he threw it to Frenchie downfield. Once again, my first thought, I heard Joe Paterno's in my head, go to the ball, go to the ball. And so
mm-hmm.
there's a thing of take your steps to go to the ball. And I remember nothing after that. My mind is completely blank. I mean, it is weird. I mean, I remember nothing except stiff-arming Warren
right
before I go to the end zone.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I remember, that from leaving the backfield to stiff-arming Warren, my mind, it didn't exist.
Because
my mind is completely blank. Now, I do want to mention this to you.
Uh-huh.
So back in New Jersey, the younger brothers are home and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and the younger kids are home, and they're watching the game. But my mother's not watching the game. My mother was not into football, and she was cleaning the house or cook, you know, just
right.
doing different stuff. She was not watching the game, but she knew something was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so she went to the record player and put on her Italian record. and this is the truth. One of my brothers was all of it. At the time of the Immaculate Reception, Ave Maria was playing.
Come on, Franco. You serious? Really? That's amazing. Because
Ave Maria was playing.
Unbelievable.
And like later on that night,
yeah,
you know, hours and hours later, it was named the Immaculate Reception.
That's incredible. You know, as you're describing the Immaculate Reception and your, I guess, your path to playing pro football when it wasn't, football wasn't even your favorite of the first three sports that you loved. I mean, I'm thinking that, and I don't want to get too, like, philosophical or religious here, but there's got to be some force working here that is pushing you towards football, pushing you to Penn State. Then you're getting drafted. Then all of a sudden you're put in this position to make this historic play. And then you're telling me that Ave Maria is playing on your mom's phonograph, you know, player. I mean, it's a pretty pretty biblical kind of story there, Franco, don't you think?
Well, it does sound kind of unbelievable.
Yeah, but it happened.
And, you know,
but it all happened.
Like a fairy tale.
Right.
You know, like a fairy tale or something.
Yeah, but it's a beautiful thing, man. That's a beautiful, you know, story. That's incredible.
Every once in a while, fairy tale does happen, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and, but, you know, but think about it, though, that was my rookie year.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And really, for like the rest of the 70, we really never even reflected on that. And it was very interesting. But when you think of the rest of the 70s, what we were accomplishing was something, you know, that no other team ever accomplished before.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And so we were doing so many things and so many great things that to reflect back didn't even have our picture. So we didn't even, you know,
right,
like that in Immaculate Reception wasn't even really like thought of or reflected on until it was all over. And then when it's over, that's when you start to reflect back to the beginning.
All right, that was the first part of the Legends of Sport Friday conversation with the late, great Franco Harrison. What an amazing life, what an amazing career, and we're really part of these great classic conversations that you can hear on Legends of Sport. Again, you know, we just play a portion of the conversation, so if you want to hear the entire thing, go to iHeart, where you get your podcast, and look up Legends of Sport. They do a great job over there. So we're going to leave it there for now. When we come back, more of Legends of Sport Friday and Andy Bernstein's conversation with Franco Harris when we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Fan in Las Vegas, the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, and the Sports Map Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. Still clown when the underground,
when we come around. Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune and Circa Sports. You can listen to us every weekday on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Fan in Las Vegas, the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, and the Sports Map Radio Network. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment or just want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline 310-400-0340. But again, it is Legends of Sports Friday. And Andy, I bring this up every week, but I was at the 49ers-Cowboys game, and I saw your good friend, the Z-Man. He was across the field, though, so I couldn't see him. But all these amazing pictures that are coming out of these conference championships and these playoff games. And listen, like, everyone's got a cool iPhone, but they want to know how to take pictures like you, my friend. You have something very cool happening. Talk about the workshop that you have planned.
Well, first of all, I'm glad you brought up the Z-Man, Michael Zegaris, at 77 years old. I'm watching him, you know, run around the field. You know, I'm laying on my couch, and he's out working his tail off at Levi's Stadium. In fact, there was a moment when there was a touchdown, and it happened right in front of him. And I freeze framed it and did a screenshot and sent it to him. You know, I think I put it on my Instagram story. He's just such an inspiring guy. And I'm so glad that you and I were able to talk about him last week, because he was a fabulous guest on the podcast. In terms of sort of paying it forward and trying to kind of move the craft to the next generation, I've taken a bold step to develop a workshop called Beyond the Lens. And we are trying to right now put together 12 weeks. It's a live interactive workshop where a little bit different than Masterclass, which is kind of a prepackaged thing, but it's the concept of Masterclass where I'll share my experience, what I've learned along the way, the missteps, the successes, a lot that I learned from the Mamba himself about the Mamba mentality. People like Pat Riley, Phil Jackson, some of the greats of photography. It's not really a hands-on, like how to take a great sports picture, but it's more of a bigger picture about life and success and giving back. So I'm encouraging people to go to our website, beyondthelens.live, and check it out. We're running a special right now. If people can get in early, we're planning to launch this in June. So thanks for asking me about that. I hope a lot of people can check it out and join us.
Loved the first part of your conversation with Franco Harris, a legend, part of one of your classics that you've done. I'd be curious, you know, what are some of the events that you've wanted to shoot or have it? You know, when I think of classic events, Pittsburgh Steelers football, right? When you look at the events you shot, what's on your list of stuff that maybe at some point in time, I got to go there?
Oh, man. I mean, looking backwards in time, if I had been born in a different era, I would have loved to have shot, you know, Joe DiMaggio or, you know, Mickey Mantle. Luckily, I was around when the 69 Mets won. I was only 11 years old. I wasn't doing photography then, but that was like the birth of my love for sports, was that age, you know, like basically 9 to 11 or 12. But man, I would have loved to have shot some Ali fights back in the day. The first Super Bowl, how cool would that have been? Some legendary matchups, you know, to been working in the NBA now 42 years, and hearing so much about the great Bill Russell, man, I would have given anything to just shot one game of Russell against Wilt. You know, that would have been unbelievable. Or Jerry West. I mean, I'm lucky to have come along when I did. It's sort of the end of the Kareem, Dr. J era, you know, going into Showtime, and then Jordan era, of course. But, you know, the golden age of the NBA, I think, was born before Showtime. I mean, you know, I look at that Celtic era and those great Laker teams, and, you know, Oscar and Elgin and all those guys. So, you know, I'm glad I was born when I was, and I've been able to have this sort of four decades. But that was a great question, man. And then currently, you know, I don't shoot football anymore. So I watch these football games and remember being on the sidelines and getting run over and having to lug big lenses around and all that, which was fun at the time. It doesn't sound like fun to me. That's one of the things that I just give kudos to my boy Zegaris, because he still loves it, still gets juice from it, still, you know, gets up for it. Physically, I don't think I could do it anymore, but I love watching my friends work hard.
I love it. And by the way, he's still on social media. He liked our post from last week, so it was very cool. The Z-Man. With that said, let's now hear the second part of your conversation on Legends of Sport Friday with Franco Harris.
Franco, I want to talk a little bit about your impact on the culture in Pittsburgh. You know, obviously, you know this, but our listeners might not realize that you were the first African-American as well as the first Italian-American to be named Super Bowl MVP. I mean, that in itself you know, one of those would have been a great accomplishment. But the fact that you, as one person, accomplished that, did that register with you? I mean, did that? I mean, I know you grew up Italian American, African American, you know, in a multicultural area, metropolitan area. But, you know, did that mean something to you back then when you accomplished this?
Well, I mean, what is pretty unique is that my rookie year also ended up having my own army.
Yeah, Franco's army, right?
Which, Franco's Italian army.
Yeah.
And so here it is. Well, you know, and, you know, like my mom, I mean, proud Italian.
Sure.
Proud, I mean, wow. Yeah. And so, you know, when people describe multi-ethnic people, and most of the time they just make it simple and say, well, you know, you're black or you're this or you're that.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom would be very offended. She would say, well, who am I, nobody?
Yeah, she only gave birth to 9 children. So I think she should have a say.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it really made me think that, you know, well, this is both my cultures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, you know, not one is, you know, both of this makes a whole. So,
right.
You know, I am what I am. And, and then I find out on my father's side that he's African, Cherokee, and English.
Wow. Okay.
And so in soccer matches, I find myself rooting for England. You know what I mean? You know, then I sing the song, Cherokee Nation. You know, I play.
Yeah.
So on my father's side, African, Cherokee, and English, and my mother's side, Italian.
That's so interesting.
And
you got, like, your head cheerleader is a guy named Frank Sinatra, right? I mean, what did your mom think of that?
I can't
even imagine.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, how incredible is that?
Right.
So Al Bento and Tony Stagno, I started the Italian Army.
Right.
And they were all together, and you know, a bunch of Italians are out at a big dinner, wine and food, and they're all talking about, how do we get Steeler fans into the, how do we get them going now? You know, things are happening. How do we get the fans riled up even more? and one guy said, I don't take an army. and one other guy said, well, there's this Harris, he's half Italian, what if we start an army? And so they came over and asked me about it, and I said,
Yeah, that's funny.
And so they started the Franco-Italian army, and then we went to Diego for the last game, and we're practicing in Palm Springs, and Myron Cope, the great Myron Cope, the regular, and founder and the Terrible Towel, saw Frank Sinatra in a restaurant.
Yeah.
And mentioned to Frank about to come to practice and join Franco's Italian Army. And he said he would, so he called Stagno, Vento. They flew out, and then the next day, Chuck stopped practicing on the field, and we had our wine ceremony.
Come on, really?
And we inducted Frank into the Franco's Italian Army.
Oh my goodness!
And so he was the first inductee outside the original guys, and made him a one-star general.
That's hilarious.
And now on the 40th anniversary of the inaugural reception, I have a function every year for the inaugural reception, and the 40th anniversary, I invited Phil Villapiano. He's the Raider guy that covered me on the Immaculate Reception. And so every December 23rd, I call Phil and thank him for doing a lousy job of covering me.
I love it. That's some great stuff, Franco.
And I call Frankie Fuqua every December 23rd.
Right.
And, you know, we have you have fun with that. But on the 40th anniversary, Phil came in for that, and secretly under pressure and torture, we inducted the Raider Phil Villapiano into Franco's Italian Army.
That almost sounds like blasphemous to have a Raider in your in your Italian Army, but it shows you what sports can do, right? That it just goes across all barriers. You know, it's a beautiful story, really, about how that all came to be. I'm wondering about your dad being a military guy, what your dad felt about his son having his own army. How did he feel about that?
You know what? And you know, my dad really wasn't educated, grew up in Mississippi, and you know, and, you know, came from slave heritage, you know what I mean? And you know, so when you look at that, it's like, wow. Like, I mean, he really felt good about it. He's a quiet guy, but he really felt, really felt good about it.
I bet.
You know, yeah, he was really proud. And as you said, he would have thought.
Who would have thought it? Yeah. Well, Frank, I want to jump ahead because you've been so generous with your time, and I don't want to keep you for too much longer, about what you're doing now these days. I know, obviously, you still live in Pittsburgh. You're very active there. You very quietly, as I understand, do a lot of work and give your time and money to various charities in Pittsburgh. The one that we found out about, the Pittsburgh Promise, do you want to talk about that one or any other one specifically that you work with?
Well, when I first got to Pittsburgh, I saw old man Mooney just doing things around the community. And I just said to myself, you know what? I want to get involved in the community. And and so very early in my career, I got involved in communities, you know, different churches around the city, and, March of Dimes, Cystic Fibrosis Readathon. You know, you get kids to read, and then they, raise money for, for children's causes and that kind of stuff. And I still have kids today who, back in the 70s, who were in elementary school, telling me, hey, Frank, I was in your readathon. You know what I mean? And you have things like that. And then you look at through all the time that, different charities and different programs that you did that to try to make a difference.
Yeah. Well, you obviously have. Yeah, for sure.
And it's funny because when I first started it back in the 70s, I was saying, wow, you know what? We'll really do stuff here. And like before, down the road a little bit, there won't be any, there won't be anything to really raise money about anymore. You know what I mean?
I'm thinking,
we'll, take care of all this stuff. And little did you know that,
right?
That there's always things that need to be done. And the whole thing with the Pittsburgh Promise is that, I know the difference that a scholarship made in my life and a number of my brothers and sisters' lives. And so scholarships can change lives and provide opportunity and experiences. And our whole thing is to have our young kids here in Pittsburgh to start thinking about their future and about college or job training, anything like this, that there are funds here for their future. And so, sure, we have expectations and we want to provide opportunity, but they have to do it.
Yeah.
They have to reach a certain grade level and a certain absentee, qualify. And
yeah,
the results have been fantastic.
Well,
it really has. And
yeah, well, that's a great way of being of service, of doing everything you can do for the community that was so good to you and loved you so much, as a player and then post-career. And I just find it ironic that after speaking to you, that here's a guy who didn't even want to be in Pittsburgh. Not only had, you know, a stellar Hall of Fame career, now giving back just amazingly to the community and the children and the people of Pittsburgh, but staying in Pittsburgh. And you lived there now, you know, how many years? 40-something years in Pittsburgh. That's that's a little ironic, don't you think, based on what you told me earlier?
You know what? It really is. But when I got here, I said, Michael, this is, you know, this is the team you're with now, so you're going to make this your home.
Right.
And, you know what I mean? So
yeah, it's beautiful, Frank.
And then who would have ever thought that I would have had a rookie year like I had?
Yeah, yeah.
And really the rest of the decade was quite a run. And great teammates, you know what I mean? And
yeah, yeah.
Great people here in the city. And, you know, Pittsburgh has really changed a lot, you know.
Yeah, it has. I was there recently. I had a lot of fun there.
Yeah, and, you know, it's been great. And I'm doing things. Well, I have to admit, I did have one dream when I was a kid, and that's funny that my one dream when I was a kid was that someday I want to be in business, and I have no idea where that came from.
Yeah, that's another divine intervention.
But then when I look at it, you know, my mother's people and everything, they're always in business. But then I find that on my father's side, you know, they come from slaves. And I find that my grandfather was a sharecropper. And you know, the sharecropper, they don't make much money selling the cotton, you know, but all the kids have to pick cotton. But then I found out that he had animals, and he built a real nice business with his animals.
Oh, that's interesting. And maybe that's where it came from.
And so, you know, I find on both sides of my family that there was, you know, there was business. But I remember telling myself, I want to be in business. I want to be in business. And I always loved business. And now I'm doing it, and I love it.
And so the business here, are you speaking of your bakery that you started with your former Penn State teammate, Lydell Mitchell? Or there's other business that you're involved with?
Yeah, we have a bakery business, and our signature product is Super Donut.
That's right. Yeah,
and that's
right.
A great name. Great name, as you know.
Right. Yeah.
Super Donut.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, a donut with minerals, vitamins, and protein. And the bakery has been, you know, has been great. And we now have a silver technology business called Silver Clean. Mm-hmm. Technology that we put into textiles like stocks and other clothing, and t-shirts and leggings, and so there would never be any odor, never be any bacteria.
Interesting.
So it doesn't matter how long you sweat, no matter how long you wear the shirt, never be any odor, never be any bacteria in these socks or. And that's our sport line called Silver Sport.
Okay.
But our product that we think that is great in that is what we call our Silver Towel, and our ultimate workout towel. You know, because when you work out, you sweat a lot. You lay your towel down. You're spreading bacteria. You're spreading. Mm-hmm. But with our towel, you never worry about cross contamination. You know, you can sweat all you want, wipe yourself off, and never worry about germs or bacteria being in that towel.
That's so interesting.
And it's, you know, that towel is always clean.
All right, that's all the time we have for this week's edition of Legends of Sport Friday. Amazing conversation with Franco Harris that was recorded back in 2019. Again, Franco Harris passed away this past December, only days before he was going to get his jersey retired, 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception. So it was great to hear his, you know, what he remembers about that game and what he remembers about that day. And it was just really fun a chat. So looking forward to having you guys join us again for another Legends of Sport Friday next week. But that's all the time we have for today. With that said, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
My cat Rachel is the silliest cat I know. One time, she played inside a paper bag for 3 hours. What a mystery. But I'm glad her health isn't. Thanks to the color-changing litter from Fresh Step Crystal's Health Monitoring Litter. This premium color-changing litter has pH-activated crystals that can help me detect potential illness early. That makes it easy for me to stay on top of her health and well-being. I may not understand all of Rachel's silly quirks, but I can keep up with the important things. Find Fresh Step Crystal's Health Monitoring Litter at a store near you. Fresh Step is a registered trademark of the Clorox Pet Products Company.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.